Hello, friends. How's it going? Matt here. You're listening to the Look Inside of His Action Sports podcast, a show where I try and uncover the most interesting stories in action sports and other related endeavours. Thanks for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoy it. I'm back in the shed. You can probably tell by the seagulls that are yelping outside. It's Monday the 15th of April. And yeah, I've got a brilliant episode. A really great conversation, actually. Very much enjoyed this one. So my guest this week is Freddie Meadows. So Freddie is a Swedish surfer who I've been aware of for a long time. And I think if you follow European surfing, you probably know Freddie. He is, as his Instagram sub-handle has it, the saga of the Swedish surfer. He is certainly the most famous surfer from Sweden. But he's also carved out one of the most singular careers in European surfing, I would say. Which would be reason enough to have him on the show. And I have been thinking about chatting to him for a while. But then a month ago, he surfed a wave in Scandinavia that really, you know, blew up, went viral, went everywhere. It's being called the biggest wave ever surfed in Scandinavia. And it's really the culmination of... One of the reasons I was so interested in this is because, yeah, it's a great wave. Yeah, you know, it's important in the history of European surfing. But really, it's obviously the culmination of Freddie's life and career to this point. You could really see that in the Instagram post that he put up afterwards, where he described, I say ran because I'm from up north, obviously. But I think he calls the wave Ran, and he put this Instagram post up with this incredible photo, but also this incredible description of it that really did speak of it in quite, I'm going to say it, spiritual terms, really. And he managed to do it in a way that wasn't really cheesy. Because obviously, as we discussed in this conversation, speaking about surfing in such terms is quite played out these days. So if you can kind of frame this kind of search in a modern way, then he managed to do that. And I was like, I actually really want to speak to this lad, because he's obviously been on, you know, there's obviously a lot going on here. There's some undercurrents to explore, from the name that he gave the wave, the explanation of why he called it that, for his relationship to nature, the way he's linked it to his surf career, his Scandinavian roots. I just thought, we're going to be able to have quite an interesting chat, me and Freddie. He did the mission with Cotty, friend of the show. So I hit up Cotty, and I also hit up Ben Mundy, another friend of the show, because Ben's just worked with Freddie on this Breitling Book of Surfing. He did a guest blog for me about that a couple of weeks ago, in fact. So they both introduced me and Freddie, bless him, straight away. I'm in, let's do it. And I could just tell from the way he communicated over email and WhatsApp that he was, you know, really smart, really humble, and there was going to be some interesting stuff to talk about. So that's what we did, and it's great, this. Like, what I really enjoyed about this conversation is, like, you know, when you do these interviews, I've talked about this before, I talk about this quite a lot, actually, in this workshop that I do about the art of interviewing, and you've got to earn trust, and it's tricky, like on Zoom, as we did this conversation, because you know you've only really got 5 to 10 minutes to kind of establish a rapport, to sort of gain the trust and to sort of start working out how to navigate the conversation. And what I could discern when this conversation was unfolding was that Freddie was kind of like really mulling over whether to fully go there and be completely honest about what he'd experienced while surfing this wave. And I'm very thankful and happy to say that he went all in, and he really, I'm not gonna say warmed up, because it's great, this chat, but like he definitely decided to go there. And I thought it was really interesting. There's a lot of themes that coincidentally, because it's Monday night and I'm tired. A lot of the themes that I discuss a lot on the podcast make an appearance, the transactional nature stuff, which I did also talk about when I was a guest on Dan Burgess's Spaceship Earth. You know, reconciling our place in the capitalist world. Didn't expect that to come up, but it did. And I just thought it was great. And I'm really grateful to Freddie for, you know, entering into the spirit of this thing so wholeheartedly as he did, and for really, you know, deciding to be vulnerable and deciding to really explain what this experience meant to him. So that's what you're going to listen to. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. I'll be back at the end. In the meantime, here's me and Freddie Meadows. Enjoy.
Well, nice to meet you, man. And your cabin looks epic.
Oh, this is my little shed in Brighton in the UK.
Okay.
We've actually got waves this evening, which is quite funny. So we've got, I think, because you grew up surfing the Baltic, didn't you? So I imagine it's quite similar. You get a lot of wind swell and a lot of junky wind to keep you keen. So have you surfed the UK?
Yeah, no, I've surfed a lot in the UK. My father's actually British, you know, so I've surfed a lot in the UK. I was going to say, when you said there was waves in Brighton this evening, that, you know, thank you for giving me your time, because I know that must be quite rare.
It's actually not that rare. It's actually, I haven't surfed a lot this winter because I've been away a lot, and it's rare. I think we got what, like 7 second period, and it's actually a northerly today. So for Brighton, it'll be okay, you know.
Okay.
But where's your old man from then in the UK?
Well, he's from, you could say he's from London.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Bit all around London.
So you've spent a bit of time over the years.
Yeah, definitely. And I also had a friend, I have a friend, Al McKinnon, who showed me around to some of the UK waves and introduced me to slabs and all these things.
Yeah, right.
So I love the UK.
So you spent some time in Scotland, presumably, and in Ireland. And
Ireland, you know, I actually haven't visited Ireland since I started getting into tubing waves. The first time I went to Ireland was a long time ago to surf, and I was just experiencing the beach breaks and the fun points. So I haven't been there for a long time, but Scotland and the UK, UK, England.
Yeah, I'm so due a trip to Scotland, actually. I've still not really surfed up there. I've got a friend who lives up there. You might know him, actually, a guy called Colin McLeod. He's like good friends with some of the British boys, some of the Cornish boys. And he's got this real beautiful little spot, you know, and every time, especially in the autumn, every time I'm a bit like, I gotta get up there.
Yeah, Scotland's super beautiful. I mean, you know, you feel it's one of those countries that makes you feel great as soon as you enter it.
Yeah, well, if you avoid the midgy season as well.
Yeah, I haven't experienced that yet, but
yeah. So I think we should start with your, I'm going to say, spiritual experience, really. Because one of the things that really prompted me to give you a shout, I've actually been thinking of giving you a shout for a long time now, because obviously, you know, your career in surfing is pretty singular, I would say, isn't it? You know, like to have managed to carve out this career for yourself as a professional, I guess, like free surfer filmer from Sweden, you know, is obviously like noteworthy. But what, obviously the wave that you've just surfed is kind of blown up globally, really, you know, everybody's been, but what I really loved was the way you talked about it on your post. It felt like you'd had a real, you know, otherworldly experience, really, like on a lot of levels, like not only just the actual experience of riding the wave, but I'm assuming the culmination of almost like a life's work, right? You know, is that how you're kind of processing it now that a few weeks have passed?
Well, yeah, you definitely hit it on the head, Matt, for sure. It was by far, afterwards, I remember, I don't know where I was, if I was on the boat or with the boys up in the little apartment in the school we rented. And I just remember thinking, like, this was by far 100% without a doubt the best day experience of my life, you know. And many dots connected during, well, during, before, during, and after, that have made me feel and grow dramatically, you know, just in the past couple of weeks. So, yeah, there's many stories from that day that I could tell. I think one of them was like the, to be honest, the build up is an interesting one, because the build up went so smoothly and it was so many weak links, like, or so many, not weak links, but so many ways that it could have gone wrong. You know, everything from the boys not being able to come and join, to the jet ski arriving 1 hour before we needed to be out there. So there were so many things that could have gone wrong and that didn't. And so many moments where I could have been very nervous and stressed, and I wasn't at all. I felt very calm and, yeah, just empowered throughout the whole thing. And then on the day, it's very rare in Scandinavia that the weather like improves as you're getting closer to the moment of truth, you know, when, as you're getting closer to surfing or your moment of going in the water, it's generally that you see a forecast far out and it will slowly deteriorate. Whether that happens the day after you've seen it or the day before it's supposed to happen. Whereas this one, in November last year, I mentioned both to Cody and to Nick that it's time to do it now. That it's time to, to surf run, and that let's make the waiting window from March. And so I went to visit Nick in Portugal in February to spend time with him and to surf, and I saw Cody down there as well, and. Yeah, and basically said, okay, let's keep our eyes open in March, and you know, we just kind of kept in touch very randomly, and then suddenly, you know, as I leave Portugal, I make my way home, I do all the like chores that I have to do in for the cabin in the south, and suddenly there's that swell, just as like, you know, we can see it 10 days out, and it starts to come, and yeah, it slowly builds up, and it keeps improving. And even the day before, it went from being, you know, it's supposed to be a snowstorm to sunny. And the wind was supposed to be, you know, stronger than it was. And then suddenly that dropped and everything just, and the swell increased, or didn't decrease at least, you know.
Sure. So did you feel like...
I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, well, I'm going to dig into it. Don't worry about that. There's a few things I want to ask you about. Like you mentioned Nick von Rupp and Cotty, who you obviously were the team. Yeah. And the other thing that really came across is this real sense of friendship, camaraderie, gratitude that you felt for the shared experience, you know, like that you'd all had. And that almost felt that was as important to you in a way as the act of surfing the wave itself, right? So why were they so important for what you were trying to achieve?
Well, the first time I saw the wave 10, 11 years ago, the first thing I felt when I saw the wave was, I really need help. This is something I can't do alone, you know?
Sure.
And as I mentioned, Nick and I have been lifelong friends, you know, since I think he was 12 and I was 14. We met in the early days. We just started surfing, and so as soon as I saw the wave, I called him and I said, I think I saw something really special. And I think what the gratitude is so deeply to everyone. I just felt like how everyone moved mountains in their own lives to be there and make it happen, you know. And on Nick and Cody's side, I think it's a beautiful thing as a friend to be able to call and say, hi, I really need your support. And they're like, okay, I got you. I'm coming just to support, you know. So I just felt that was super beautiful.
Yeah, it really came across that. It really came across the fact that they recognized the significance of it for you, you know, like, because you did you, so tell me, you said 10 years, was it, that you first saw the wave and thought it was possible?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm obviously not going to ask you where it is, so I won't insult you back to where it is, but can you talk me through a little bit about, because I think one of the most interesting things about the response was like what, that's Scandinavia, you know, like everyone was, because obviously you've pioneered the Baltic Sea and you've pioneered a lot of those coastlines, and you've surfed like obviously really significant and impressive waves, but obviously this thing is another story altogether, isn't it? And I think like that when did you begin to conceive that these waters even had the potential for this type of wave and session?
Well, I mean, when it comes to anywhere outside of the Baltic and Scandinavia, you kind of know that, you know that it's a massive, massive area of water. So it can behave like any other big ocean. I remember when I first started surfing in Iceland and Norway, you didn't really think of it like that, but it was kind of like a step up from the Baltic. And I think like when I packed my ski, and because my ski was like, I saved up and got that not to tow or surf necessarily huge waves or waves. Like I got it for exploration, you know, and cause they are weapons in stormy conditions.
Yeah.
So when I was packing my ski and my 6'3" step up at the time, I kind of laughed like, haha, why are you even bringing that board? You know?
Right.
Cause it wasn't even a big swell and but there was good period. And so I drove anyway, 30 hours and turned up without sleeping, thinking I'm going to surf like a head high little overhead slab.
Right.
And it's going to be sunshine and a kind of end of summer, just really long, beautiful days and warm. And I turn up and I round, I get, you know, navigate through the archipelago and round the headland. And yeah, I was just like, this can't, I had to look at the charts, the imagery charts, right. You know, going, this is not possible that this is the reef. Is this the reef we're looking at? You know?
Right.
And yeah, so there it was, just 30 hours later, it was too big for, and too much for anything I had with me. Equipment wise, but also I think like I wasn't prepared for it at the time, but I knew that, okay, this isn't even a big swell, this wave looks the way it does, and I just drove 30 hours to turn up here, like this must have some sort of, you know, important lesson about,
yeah, like meaning, because I think that's something that really comes across, like it's a bit of a cliche in surfing, isn't it, to talk about quests and search and you know, to sort of talk about these things in spiritual terms, but it does really feel like that's quite the right tone for this, you know, because even the name that you gave it, you know, like is, tell me about that, because that also felt significant. That also felt like almost like an act of gratitude, you know, like was that kind of where you were coming from with it?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously fascinated by the old sagas and
yeah,
Norse mythology. I've you know, had them read to me since I was little, and I don't know, I just always found them fascinating and et cetera. So by at that combined with also feeling this amazing energy of Scandinavia, you know, it's a really beautiful, like via reading those old sagas and reading the old scripts and ways, you kind of understand the energy of the place in a different way, you know. So
as in like from a kind of folklore sort of cultural perspective.
Yeah, you understand why huge kind of erosions in mountains are called giant seats, you know, because they look like that. Well, you know, I think most of all, you understand it. It makes you feel like every part of nature, or however you want to call it, is living.
Yeah.
And I think that that is what fascinated me a lot about the old tales, because I really feel that way. I feel that, you know, it's the ocean is not just the ocean. It's, you know, science really helps us describe and explain, you know, all these things. But I think that also it is this, I think everything is this kind of living thing, you know, and when you, that's the feeling I had when experiencing surfing Ran and the wave. And I think the name came from just turning up and seeing it, how big it was straight away. And I kind of just knew that, okay, this wave needs a powerful name. So,
and did that always inform like the views that you've just talked about with, of the way that you're talking about, you I'm not sure you realize it, Freddie, but you've just stumbled across a bit of a theme of the Looking Sideways podcast.
I have.
A little bit. Yeah. Cause one of the things I've been talking about a lot is, and I've been talking to guests about a lot, like is the way that we experience nature, you know, like, and the way that it can be one dimensional, as insofar as like this wave exists for me to have a good time, or like, you know, this body of water exists for me to benefit my mental health or whatever it is, you know, like I think it's actually quite hard to fully experience nature in the way that you're describing it. And also I think it takes the type of dedication that you've obviously shown, you know, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, you've dedicated your life, haven't you, to understanding this part of the surfing world. You've pioneered this part of the surfing world. It's one of the things I'd like to ask you when we get there in a bit is about how almost your career path has prepared you for this moment as well, in a lot of ways, by the looks of it. You know, it feels like you've had to like create this opportunity for yourself, you know, like, so your path has always, it seems from the outside, had a lot of forward motion, you know, a lot of being about like, yeah, you want to surf good waves, you want to travel, you want to have these experiences, but it feels like you've always been looking for something a little bit on a more connecting level, if you like, you know, like there's the act of wave riding, but as you've just described, there's also like how you contextualize it on a personal level, as you've just described, and also like on a level about the land you're from, the country you're in, the history. This is all connected, right? And this gives it a deeper meaning almost in some ways.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about in that, in all that you just said. It was very interesting. I think that maybe we're coming also to a place where it's, because as you said before, it could be taken as cliche to talk about what surfing does to you on a deeper level, and I don't think that getting deep necessarily needs to mean that you're not lighthearted or positive about stuff, you know. So I think that what surfing and seeing surfing and waves and walking through the shore break as a little boy did, what that did, I think that that's the, it made me very fascinated about waves and their various their various, almost want to say personalities, but just like their various,
yeah, like properties,
characteristics, you know, properties, characteristics, and how each one is unique, you know. And I think I remember at school, like in geography, looking at the oceans and going like, I wonder what a wave in the middle of the ocean is doing right now, you know,
yeah,
how it's behaving, or where it's going and what it feels, or what it feels like. Or so I think that that feeling as a little guy, that is the reason I started surfing, because it was like every sport, but extremely athletic in its own way. And the arena was like this endless freedom playing field. And I think that that whole part is the reason I started and is the reason I do what I do today. And I hold strong on, I like hold on to that feeling strongly to.
Yeah, so it is this culmination that I'm talking about then, like this, like, this is what has such meaning for you then, this experience, because it is almost like, because how old were you when you started? Like, I'm assuming like 12 or something.
Yeah. Like I started seeing what surfing was at around 12.
And how old are you now?
36.
So that's over half your life, isn't it? Like dedicated to this understanding of what it could mean, which is interesting, isn't it? You know, it's no wonder really that you've been so impacted by this.
Yeah. And I think, as you said, that everyone has their own way of relating to surfing with the ocean and or nature, whether you're a skier or whether you're a surfer or a kayaker or climber,
swimmer,
walker, yeah. You know, everyone sees and is benefited by that connection, regardless what it is. And whether it's a spirit or you feel it on like that you see or have these spiritual connections to it, or you just see it as like, oh, it's a beautiful thing to be in. Rock is just rock and sea is just sea. It doesn't, you know, everyone's different on that level. But I think since a young age, I've seen it.
You recognize that at the time when you were a kid? Did you recognize it as this? Because you said that you used quite an interesting phrase. You said something like you recognize surfing for what it is, almost, you know, like almost like the switch clicked at 12, you know, when you understood. So was that, did it always have this dimension to you from that young age? You know, you said you were fascinated by like geography and waves, and were you quite a sporty kid? Were you like quite into like, because Scandi's like pretty, you know, football's huge, right? And like skiing's huge. And so were you quite did surfing give you something that these other, because most Scandinavians that I know are like generally really active, like really sporty, like, you know, like there's a culture of it, right? So did this give you something different that perhaps you were looking for?
Yeah. I mean, I was always getting threatened by teachers at school that,
you're one of those kids.
Yeah, if I didn't pull it together, the sport was going
right.
And also my dad, he's super playful, and you know, my mother's super fearless and adventurous. So, kind of we've always been playing. And dad would always take us to play like tennis or football, or you know, and we'd always be doing something fun.
Yeah.
When we're free time, so
yeah.
So yeah, I think that's how it all started. Sport. I always knew that sport was something I was going to do.
Okay.
That whatever it was, it was going to be sport or something creative. But and then when you found surfing, it was just obviously all of that in one. And then the lifestyle, it was like, you know, we were sleeping on a beach in southern Portugal with the Lipkes. You know, my dad was friends with the Lipkes. Dad, Botago, and we were just sleeping on the beach, and I was like, are you kidding me?
Right.
We're like sleeping out on the beach, eating from cans, and like just we're free all day just to do stuff, play around. Yeah, I just remember it being the best ever. So from then planted a seed.
Yeah. So were there any of the surfers growing up around you?
So I remember I had seen surfing abroad and then borrowed a windsurfing board from a neighbor because the windsurfing board was just kind of lying there the whole time. So I would just borrow it and paddle around and then put it back every evening. And it was like probably 12 or 13 feet long.
Okay.
I remember I had like cuts on my inner arms. Looked like
from scratching on the sides.
From scratching on the sides, paddling. But it looked like teenage angst.
Right.
And, so I was borrowing that, and then I remember one summer my mother had some friends visiting from Stockholm, and we went down the coast to what is now a beach I surf all the time, especially since then. We went down to a beach that it was super warm, sunny day. And I remember turning up to the beach and hearing waves, you know, because that was like the thing at home as well. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd open the window and you'd hear the waves, because I was like 500 meters from the beach. And if you'd hear the waves, it meant there could be waves to paddle out on. So yeah, that was like the code. And we got to the car park and we heard waves. And so my brother and I just ran through the forest, got down there, and there was a bunch of surfers and we were just mind blown.
Right. No way. That's funny.
Mind blown. We spent the whole day just, yeah.
And trying to like, surf. I'm quite interested because you know, I kind of alluded to it, like the career that you've carved out as like a Swedish professional surfer is really unusual. And that, I think there's a parallel in our country. So my background is snowboarding, and I'm a little bit older than you. And my generation of people in snowboarding in the UK kind of had to invent what it meant to be a British professional snowboarder, really. Sure. You know, like I was never good enough to be a professional snowboarder, but I was really involved in the industry. I used to run magazines, and there was a big group of us that like all essentially grew up with the, you know, quite similar really by the sounds of it. In our case, it was like the early 90s. We discovered snowboarding. We all skated as well. And, you know, you looked at the American magazines and you looked at the American industry because that's all you really had to go on. Like, you know, there was no British professional snowboarders back then. So we, as a group, and I was obviously, there's a few people that were older than me that kind of pioneered it a little bit, but quite quickly, like, we carved out our own little path to create that. So I'm really interested. It feels like, as a fellow Northern European who has made a career out of something which is not the obvious, it's different now because you've obviously created this path. So a kid in Sweden now who's 11 is going to see you, aren't they? And they're going to think, well, I can maybe do that. Or they're going to look at Cotty, or they're going to look at other people. Same as Cotty, obviously. Same as Gabe, Gabe Davis. You know, they had to make that up. Like,
totally.
So, how, talk me through that, because I'm guessing it was a similar thing, right? You know, you got the magazines. It's California. It's this, that, and the other. It probably felt quite distant, right? So, how did you sort of have the confidence to give that a go? To think, and what path did you follow originally?
Yeah. Well, I've always been fascinated by the generation before myself, you know, your generation, and as you say, Gabe, and all the surfers that found the famous spots in Sweden and everywhere else. You know, like the work they did without the technology we have is, you know, mind blowing. And then,
so who are the legends? Tell me about that. So who are the Swedish, like, you know, who are the pioneers in the Swedish surf scene that you would have looked up to when you were a kid?
I remember, I remember just also in the South, the older guys sometimes would, you know, pick me up at my home and take me surfing or lend me a leash or, you know, these things. And so they were obviously super cool, in my eyes. And, yeah, I think it was weird for them because there was no other kids at that time. It was like me at 14 and then, or 13, and them at, you know, 30 or 28 or so. And then I remember this, a guy called Henio Skaldin, he became like a great friend and mentor. And he was one of the first guys surfing in Ture outside of Stockholm and finding the waves around there. And, you know, in the '80s they were in dry suits and, you know, all those things. So, and using teletext. And I remember when I was younger, even using teletext and freaking out over, you know, you knew that it was going to be like, you know, 11 meters per second, but you didn't know when during the day.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't know which, you know, now you can pinpoint it literally to like the minute. You know?
Yeah.
So serious big ups to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And then, so what, early on as a kid, did you always think like, right, I'm going to try and be a professional surfer, or were you just sort of cruising with it and seeing how it went?
I just fell so deeply in love with it, right? So I was like, okay, well, I need to do everything I possibly can to like make this my life and something that I can like follow and make it a path and something I do every day, or at least base my life around, you know. And at that time, you know how it is being in the industry so long, that you know, how everything's always changing. And I think at that time, the only way to really become a professional in any of the sports was to compete or to know, I guess, the right photographers and be on the beach or on the right mountain.
Yeah. Those partnerships.
Yeah.
Get trying to start getting coverage, start forging relationships, start making a name for yourself, that kind of classic path. So that was the route.
Yeah. And then, but also like within pro surfing, I think at least every pro surfer I knew or looked up to, you know, they were or had competed in some way. I think, you know, maybe back then Rasta was the only guy who didn't, or maybe Aussie Wright.
It wasn't many, really.
It was pretty, you know, like everyone on tour was super cool as well, you know, so like you just followed that path and like, okay, pro juniors, and then you maybe get a sponsor who'll take care of you for the summer, and
yeah,
and then you have, you know, oh, suddenly that happened. Okay, wow, cool. And then I remember like at like 19, asking some Swedish brands to see if they'd be up for helping and like bless them. You know, they were like, surfing, what? Like,
yeah, Swedish surfing. You what, mate?
Like, I think Hawaii, go that is that way, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. That's why it's so interesting what you've done, because if you're even, if you're French, if you're Portuguese, I'm assuming for Nick it was a bit different really because of where he's from, right? You know, he's probably a little bit more of an accepted path to follow, like community to follow, but wasn't really that case for you. So did you, that, so presumably when you could, you just you moved to compete essentially, and that was the idea originally.
Yeah, so I moved to Portugal at 16. I just left home and knew that was legally accepted.
Yeah.
And moved.
I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. And like, yeah, it's kind of, I just knew that it was also now or never.
Yeah.
And that I just didn't have the same opportunity to do this as a young guy. And, you know, I was just grateful that I knew there and then, because I knew that, like, dude, I was out skateboarding in the rain and, you know, pretending I was on waves and
yeah,
just the whole thing. So, I just had to make it happen somehow. So I just left and went there. And then from then, I was always just surfing with surfers who were so good and a lot better than I was, obviously, and building up with them and just going that way. However, I always did have a vision of perfect waves in the Baltic.
Right. But so even from back then, you were like, actually, perhaps that's something to start thinking about.
Well, because there was one day when I was maybe 15 and I had maybe been into surfing for a year then. I'd upgraded from the windsurfing board that I'd borrowed from the neighbor. So
yeah,
we had moved on.
The neighbor found out by this point?
I don't think that he ever found out.
That's classic.
I'm very grateful that it was there, because if that wasn't there, I might just have moved on to the next thing, you know.
Mm.
But
yeah,
the surfing board hadn't been lying there, and I'd been noticing it. But where were we?
you were saying you traded up, you got rid of the windsurf board, and you'd seen the potential. Yeah.
So no,
you said you were 15, maybe.
Yeah, like 14, 15, and I remember coming back from playing tennis with my brother. That was like our thing. We'd get up every morning and go and try to play tennis with each other and kind of cycle 20 minutes there. And I remember cycling back and coming like just down the little, we were amongst other houses in the forest and like driving down our driveway and hearing the ocean just rumbling harder than I'd, the ocean, the Baltic Sea, rumbling harder than anything I'd heard from it before. So I just got everything together and got down there and there was no wind, but there was swell. And so it all of a sudden like looked like these waves abroad, but in just a smaller version, smaller form. And I was standing in like waist high deep water, seeing tubes, just losing my mind. So I think that sort of set off a wondering.
Yeah. So when did you start to... Like the path that you're on now, I sort of refer to it as like free surf career. I think it'll do as like a description, you know, in terms of like working with brands, making your own content, like traveling, trips, exploring. I'd like to come back to the creativity point that you raised, because I do think there's obviously quite an aesthetic with what you do, and there's quite a creative approach to what you do, which is interesting.
Thank you.
But in terms of when did you start to think, because like, you know, you mentioned before, like the classic route back when you were starting out was contests, and the sort of classic story, you named two exceptions, Ozzy and Rasta, but it tended to be like, you know, once people had hung up the bib, you know, like Machado obviously competes, does the competitive career, Tom Curran, you know, but you've kind of, when did you start to think like, actually, because you mentioned you started talking to brands early on. So did you kind of recognize that you were going to have to get the right partnerships, get the right stories, and like start telling your own story really to make this happen?
Yeah. I mean, I from kind of watching Marlon and Melvin and Nick and Goni and these other guys, I knew that obviously sponsorship was the way forward. And I thought that there were some cool Swedish brands and how cool it would be to represent them. But, you know, as I said, to be honest, getting sponsored by Quicksilver Sweden was the first, well, sponsor. You know, they gave me a couple wetsuits and some clothes, and that felt insane. So at that time, it was just, you know, just that meant you were on the right track if you had someone backing you or, you know, yeah, supporting you in some way.
Yeah.
But the main, I've always found just kind of, it sounds cheesy, but entrepreneurial things interesting, you know. I also, from an early age, realized that the more you collect, the more stress you have, and the less you can grow maybe on the other side, or the harder it gets to grow on the other side of things. So that balance has always been quite clear. But I've always found it like interesting to, or it's exciting to collaborate, you know?
Yeah.
And seeing those waves in the Baltic when I was 15, that day where it all went clean, set something off. And that led to, now that if I kind of move forward 5-6 years, I'm 20-21, I've competed since I was 17, which has helped me a lot, because you're seeing all these incredible surfers, you know, on a daily basis on the pro juniors and the QSs, and I'm just getting into the QS age. And I go to Scotland for the Coldwater Classic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I like looked so forward to it, obviously because it was I was riding for O'Neill at the time, but also because,
yeah, right,
it was just the best contest ever, you know, like I felt right at home. You know, the Scots are the best. And the whole setup was, you know, it was great waves, and the whole setup was great, you know.
That's got more legendary, that series of contests, as time has gone on, hasn't it? I think. Oh. Like, it's people that were, I never had the good fortune to go there, but I've got some friends who were involved with that, and everyone really sees that as a bit of a high point, don't they? I think those events.
Totally. 100%. I mean, I remember surfing heats and overhead tubes going, I don't even know how to surf heats and overhead tubes.
Right.
You know,
it's a real formative thing for you then.
Yeah, of course. You know, but one of a really formative thing there was meeting Al McKinnon.
Sure.
Because, you know, there's this guy in flip-flops and shorts walking up to me on like an early April's morning, and it's like, you know, zero. And I'm just like, okay, who's this epic character? And and we hit it off. And anyway, he starts to take me around to these waves. And the first time he showed me a slab, I obviously was like, that's not a wave, Al. Like, you can't surf waves like that. We obviously have to wait for the tide to go up or something, you know, to come in. And he's like, no, now's the perfect time. It's don't worry, it's doable. And it's not dry, because in the beginning, when you look at slabs, you think they're dry, you know, you think that they're not doable, but until somebody does them and shows you it's not dry. So after learning a lot from him on, like, yeah, I guess the bathymetry of what slabs need, and the forecasting for slabs, I suddenly realized that, hold on, in Sweden, this is like the Baltic is, this could be what we have above everything else, you know? Like, yeah, we right. have points, and but like, imagine finding these world-class waves
yeah.
In the Baltic. Like, I've, you know, that short period granite hard reefs or rocks, like, okay, those things we have for sure.
Yeah.
And that set it off in my mind and started me, I started looking at the bathymetry charts for Sweden and the weather patterns and kind of collecting data in my own way on how or where what weather happens where, kind of thing.
And it's almost like that perfect combination of all the things you've been talking about, isn't it? Like, you know, you're interested in, like, because you said from the beginning you were the science of it, if you like, the geography, the, you were already fired up by that. So then you've got the element of like meeting, like we talked about, the partnerships, like meeting a photographer that can point you in that direction. And then obviously you have this experience and you're like, ah, there's a bit of an angle here, you know, like it's, sure. It's all sort of coming together there, isn't it?
Which is... Definitely. Definitely. And I mean, like at school, the only thing that what I loved about geography was it just made you, it was like your first step into adventure.
Yeah.
Because you hear about these places and you know, big mountains and big seas and deep seas and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah.
But then, yeah, obviously, as you say, the dots connect after meeting Al. And yeah, it's a wild one. I've definitely thought about it a lot these past few weeks since surfing around.
All the points that have left you to, that have led you to this place.
Yeah. And, you know, it feels strange being interviewed about it because I feel this need to ask you so many questions, but then before I realize this is an interview with me about these things.
Hey, fire away, man. That's the way this goes sometimes. That's all good. Yeah. Don't worry about that. I'll ask you a couple more like traditional interview questions, but you feel free to take this wherever you want. But like, because this has been a really nice kind of overview of as well. Like I said, I really wanted to sort of understand how you'd created the career that you've got. And I do want to sort of go back a little bit to one of the points you made previously, which was the entrepreneurial point, because I think that's really important. And I think especially if there's younger people listen to this who are not, you know, basically anyone who's made a career out of this, whether it's doing what I do, whether it's doing what you do, whether it's photographers like Al, you have to be an entrepreneur. Like, you just do. Like, you know, you have to find the angle that's going to work for you. And I actually think it's so competitive being sponsored these days, and everyone's a content creator, blah blah blah, we all know that. And so you have to kind of do it the way that you've done it, you know, especially if you come from somewhere like that's not on the main industry path. You have to find that angle, don't you? You have to find that way of selling yourself. You have to find the partnerships, the brand relationships. So is that you sort of said, like, I was always interested in that, and that was something that did you get that from quite an early age? Because the final thing I'll say before you answer that as well is, like, you need that throughout your career as well, don't you? Because it's one thing to look at contests and be like, oh, I'm going to do that, but that's a short period of time. If you want to do this for long, you got to find, there's got to be different stories that you can help tell, doesn't there? So is that something that you recognized early, that was going to be necessary for you?
Well, I always saw that, even though maybe coming from Sweden in many ways was a curse as a surfer, you know, that you didn't get to improve as fast, and the many opportunities to surf, you know, you spent your whole upbringing wishing that, oh, imagine it was a little bit bigger, or imagine I was a little bit smaller, or, you know. So like, but then I always knew or felt in my heart that one day it would be a blessing, you know?
Right. Interesting.
And with that came, I didn't ever feel doubt in that. I just felt interest in the visions that kind of started to give me after. I wouldn't say getting tired of competing, but I was just realizing at around 24, 25, I started to get that feeling that, like, you know, how much do I really love this? And I was trying to hide that feeling from myself for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, well, because I also think that, you know, you don't have to love what you do every second of every moment you do it, you know. So I was like, you know, if that feeling of that can come and go, that can come and go. But then I think when I was 26, I was with a bunch of the boys in Portugal, and we were training for various competitions. And I just suddenly woke up one morning and I was like, okay, we've had a training set up for 10 days now, and I've avoided every single moment of it for the past, you know, right, nine of them. Like, I get a message from the trainer saying we should be at this beach at this time. I end up going to that beach at that time. Like, okay, Fred, what's going on? You know, you obviously.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing was, in combination with that, we'd had like a pretty stormy time. So at night it was very stormy, and having these wild dreams, and a lot of them was like about the Baltic coastline. And so, yeah, the combination of those two things together made me kind of feel that, hold on, maybe you need to, this list you've been creating for 5 years since Al kind of turned you onto slabs.
Yeah.
Maybe this is, you know, you've been longing more and more for each year. You're getting more and more visions of the kind of brands you know, because I was seeing like the car campaigns. I was seeing the various aesthetics for a clothing campaign, or for working with an energy company, or making clean energy, and I don't know, capitalism with ethics in a sense, or business with ethics, because I feel like the whole business with business, or business is business, is like three words that have created some problems, you know, because it kind of removes this moral within us. And then so a big drive within me was like, okay, how can I, to the, at least the best of my ability, represent and whatever I do on a capitalistic way, try to make it at least inspiration for people or helpful for the planet. And, you know, that's not easy, because nothing's helpful for the planet. The best thing is just to sit still. But
we're all grappling with that one.
of course, you know, but like, I don't know, how can at least you try to be a part of that turning tide, you know?
Yeah, sure. No, I understand. I'd have very similar thoughts myself doing what I do, because... Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all complicit in this way of living, aren't we? And we all benefit from it greatly, but equally, you cannot be unaware of the impact, and you cannot be unaware of the fact that it's not sustainable in the traditional sense of the word. You know, it's not finite, is it?
No, sure. Totally. And I believe that, like, you know, I obviously believe that we have to take the most care of our planet as we possibly can, but cars or transport, those things are not going to go. We need to just push to get it to the right place as fast as we can, because I think that that's a quicker direction than trying to stop everything.
Another theme that's been quite common on Looking Sideways over the last year or so, and which I have, also have a great interest in. So you mentioned the word aesthetics, and I alluded to that earlier. Like, I do really think that your visual approach to this is, it must be quite considered, right? It must be something that you think about quite carefully, like in terms of like how you creatively represent yourself and your act of surfing, because it's definitely complementary to the kind of, I guess I used the word spiritual earlier, philosophical, however you want to talk about it, but this aesthetic, you know, it's a whole thing, right? When did you start thinking about that?
Well, of course, I'm like everyone else who has insecurities about what you do or your work and doubts and all these things. But I've also felt very solid in something that I can describe now, but maybe at the time or when it was starting, I didn't really know how to describe it, but it was more, I felt very solid in the, just the fact that, all right, the easiest way to succeed in what, or get the message across or whatever it is your goal is to be you, because, and to tell it, because tell it your way, because I've also thought about that, like, well, why even tell a story? Why even release a YouTube episode? Because everyone else is doing it. Or why even go surfing? Or why even drive a car? Yeah. Like, you know, like sometimes you get in those moments, like, but why anything? Because
who cares? Yeah, who the fuck cares about me doing the podcast?
Exactly. But at the same time, it's like, no, because there's only one Matt, you know?
We're driven to tell stories. Like, I just fundamentally believe that. Like, we just are, like, as people, whether that's in the bar with your friends, whether that's like, we're a people of expression, aren't we? You know, we want to express ourselves. Like, we just do. Like, we want to, whether you look at that from an ego point of view, you know, like, recognize me, you know, like, or it's a particular story. That's a human urge, I think, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's important to express, because there is, and like, if it's somehow an answer to all of those questions, it's because it's like, yeah, there is only one you, so express you. And I think as an entrepreneur or whatever we want to call it, I think that is a huge lesson I've learned is just to not be shy of what I feel and like how I want to portray or how I see it. Because like, yeah, I've many times thought that, well, you just see it like everyone else, Fred, like, what do you, you know, whatever. But at the same time, then when you start to put stuff out and you realize like, no. Or when you see other people's stuff and you get really inspired by them, you realize that with like them doing it is the reason it's inspiring, because that's their expression. So everyone's expression is important because it will inspire someone somewhere.
Well, it's one of the paradoxes of creativity, I think you're describing there, isn't it? Because ultimately that's, again, a very overused word, but I will use it. Like what you're talking about is like authenticity. People recognize it. People recognize honesty. They recognize authenticity. Mm-hmm. And it's only when you like free yourself up to do that in your own way that I believe anyway, that you actually start making things that are actually any good or like good, like that people should listen to. Because when you're younger, obviously, there's actually like quite an interesting theory about this in art critic circles called, which talks about a few years ago on here, called the anxiety of influence, which is basically like, you know, when you're a kid, when you're an immature artist or whatever, like you copy things because it's how you start. Like, of course you do. Everyone does it. But then the stronger artist, as the theory goes, soon realizes that to create art of value, of authentic truth, you have to find your own voice and stop basically cribbing from the people that you admire. I strongly believe that's true, really. And I strongly believe that's kind of what you're talking about here in terms of like finding your voice, you know, like what is my voice? Like, how can I express myself in an honest way? And that's why I was kind of homing in on that a little bit from the sort of, you know, the path of your story, because obviously there's a point where you really lent into that, right? You really lent into like this idea of how you could communicate what surfing is to you, what Scandinavia is to you, what the search means to you, and led you here, didn't it?
Yeah. I want to do good, you know. I want to do good things here and during my time here and surfing became a vessel to do that. And I think that if, as I said, I don't really know what the future brings on that sense, but every step, you know, like just taking, for example, art in school and like drawing, you know, drawing the scapes. I was thinking about the other day, I like literally I'm in school, I drew escape of where I surfed the other day.
Right.
And so, yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, don't feel free to, or don't feel afraid to do whatever. And this is talking to the younger guys out, or younger guys and girls out there, but, like, don't be afraid to do something that you feel is really right.
And good, not follow because, the path.
Yeah, because especially now, with algorithms and all these things that force you to create in a certain way, because that's what's going to be trending, or, you know, I can imagine it being, I know it's tough. It's tough to just stay on your way, but.
Well, no one's immune from it either, are they? It doesn't matter, like, how single-minded you are, like how, I defy anyone to go on Instagram when you're having a bad day and look at it and not feel like you're failing. Or, totally. You know, I think that goes true for anybody, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah. No, dude. Yeah. And I admire people who are really good at it, and who understand it, because my brain's not really wired that way.
But you made it work for you though, of course.
That's why I think, like, once again, back to the do you, because if you do you, you kind of bypass all the complications of having to learn and understand all these things, because you will come out in the way that you are good at coming out.
I think you're right. I mean, one question I've got from hearing just as we talk is, it feels like you're quite good at listening to your inner voice, like your you know, which you have to learn, obviously, as a human, I think, like, to sort of, like, because there's a theme of learning here, isn't there, with what we've been discussing, and your career and your approach to surfing. Like, you're obviously quite good at reflecting, like, self-reflection and think, but also, like, in a positive way by the sounds of it, like, looking at it and thinking, like, okay, well, I've done that, so what am I going to do next? And
a lot of lonely time in a cabin.
30-hour drives will do that, right?
Yeah, 30-hour drives and 6 weeks in Scandinavia winters in cabins will make you reflect, my friend.
Have you learned? Can you learn to do that though? Has that been something you've kind of got better at?
Of course you get better at it, and you understand what that voice is, and that it is your own, and etc. etc. I think, like, you know, it's hard to navigate always, but I definitely have felt lucky in that sense that I've had the freedom from my parents to kind of think how I want to think and go on my adventures, you know. And then I've just always been that guy, you know. Who has a vision and will go and do what I can to make it happen. And the visions have been everything from the waves in Sweden to Ron and all these things, and even just to leave home, and I don't know, you just connect it all and feel extremely grateful for every single step, and it's cool.
It feels like you're still digesting it, what happened.
That's a kind way of saying I'm mumbling, but
no, I don't think that's not what I mean. It's not what I mean at all. But no, I'm joking. Has it changed you?
It has, actually, and it hasn't. You know, I wake up and I have the same epic thoughts and the same bullshit thoughts that come and go, you know. But on a deeper level, of course, I feel different. I feel like I saw parts of myself that I hadn't seen before, especially during my wipeout. I had a pretty cool wipeout, pretty bad one. It's not often that you're out at a session with Nick Van Roop and Andrew Coddy and you have the worst wipeout, then, you know.
Yeah, right. Good company there. So talk me through that then. So what happened?
Basically, so, I mean, I started surfing and surfed for about an hour and a half. Nick was towing me. Cody was doing the spotting. And after about an hour and a half, I got a wave and I was like, okay, I need to rest a bit. And also nice to let the other guys, you know, it's their turn to surf. So I went up and Cody got straight in to bomb and deep and got pushed really deep that he got nosebleed. So they kind of, set everything up and set the tone for kind of what we're dealing with. So then Cody had a few more waves and then Nick got some waves and I was just having this feeling like, have I achieved what I came here for, you know, like, or have I done what I needed to do? Like I'd had like thoughts about like, okay, you have to really go to the edge that day. Like that day you have to go to the edge and yeah, just have full trust in the whole experience, you know, if it is on. And I remember just feeling this feeling like, I don't think I've achieved what I came here for this day. And at that moment, Morgan Mawson, my really close friend, another guy I'm super grateful to, he calls on the walkie-talkie because just before he called, we feel the wind just go even more perfect. It was 90% perfect and it just went 100% perfect. And
right.
It had lulled for about an hour and a half and suddenly something was starting to happen. You know, when you just kind of look at the ocean and you're just like, something's about to happen. That was starting to happen. That what was going on. And Morgan calls on the walkie talkie and he's like, Fred, I think you should have one last go. In my mind, I'm like, yes, one last go. Cody's also calls and like, Fred, do you want to have another go? Like, because we had to have the boat back. We had to leave an hour later with the boat. So I went out again, caught a pretty okay one, got a really, really good one, the one that photo that I posted.
Yeah.
Because it's also like the first time we're really surfing the spot. You know, you don't know where to be in the barrel. It's very tricky. It's not a perfect Indo or, you know, Tahitian slab. It's got Scandinavian in it. It's
yeah.
It's got some weirdness to it, some ancient depth. So then after that good one, I get probably the biggest wave I had all day, and very grateful not to fall on that one, and kind of got away, made it out into the channel. I was like, wow, I felt that was something serious behind me. And when you're towing waves like that, you almost don't know what it is that you're actually riding, you know. And then the next one I went on, and that's the Wipeout. And we were like getting waves in quick succession. I was already kind of tired, like just from all the organizing as well, from the trip 2 weeks before and everything. And so I was just feeling like, you know, I was living on fumes a little bit, and I let go of the rope a little bit too early and didn't make it to the bottom with enough speed. And as I got just into the flats, it was drawing so hard that the nose of my board just dove and I skipped a couple times. And yeah, just knew that here we go. Which was a really cool feeling in a sense, because there was just nothing I could do about it. It was just that nightmare situation you've had for since you saw the wave that this could happen was happening. And so, yeah, that was definitely a part of you that was just like, okay, well, now there's no avoiding it. Like you've avoided it for 10 years, you know, all this stuff, but now there's no avoiding it's happening. But then after that, I felt so relaxed and so like at one with the wave, and that it was like a motherly kind of punishment, you know, where there's like love behind it as opposed to it being like, you know, there was care behind it. And I remember like rolling along the bottom, which is really deep. It's very deep reef there. rolling along the bottom and going like, and just feeling a lot of confidence. And at the same time, feeling the need to, like, what is all of this about? Why? Why are you doing this? What is all of this about? And it's like, the message kind of came clear to my head that, you know, I don't like the word activist so much, because it's, number one, I admire and appreciate activists so much in my life. At the same time, I feel sorry for them because they get so much stick. But what I felt at that time, underwater, literally on the reef, I felt like, all right, this ocean requires and like asks for nothing from us. Only, as I wrote in that post, only love and respect. Like, it requires nothing, and it gives every single day unconditionally. And what if it does want to have a relationship, you know, with us? Or what if it's more or less crazy to have a relationship with the ocean than to think of it in that way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all those thoughts are happening to me at that time. And I just remember that when I come up from this, there was no obviously doubt that I was not going to come up. I was just like, okay, when I come up, I'm going to be like, I understand that any kind of acknowledgement you get from this is all just to build a voice to do something about, or to like at least try to be an inspiration to reduce the separation from nature that we have in society. You know, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't, like, you know, it's not that I have a bigger purpose or anything like that than anyone else. I don't mean it like that. I mean it more just like that, you know, these great feats that you do in your life, they have to mean something, and you have to make them use of them if you can.
That's really interesting. That's it really is. So you're, and you don't know the answer, obviously. So I used the phrase, you're digesting it, but that's what you're digesting, isn't it? Obviously the experience, but the meaning of the experience.
Well, I obviously feel very vulnerable talking to you about it. Because I haven't mentioned it in that way to anyone, and you're obviously a big podcast and all these things, but.
Well, I very much appreciate the honesty there. You know, that was just extremely fascinating to hear. You know, this is why I use the word digest though. Like, because obviously you're, and this is why I've been talking about these things in terms of learning, you know, and like how for you, it's all part of this process. Right. So that's,
I mean, I've understood one thing, Matt. One thing I've definitely understood, and I think that this is the way it is, but that via nature, we'll achieve this maximum fulfillment within ourselves, and it will be this ultimate master, partner, whatever you want to call it, tool or vessel or way to achieve your greatest potential of yourself. And I think that, I think the reason is to do any of these big things is to obviously achieve your greatest potential, but also to be a voice for something that's suffering, you know. And how to do that, I have no idea, really. Like, I have no idea
that's what's so interesting about this, though, isn't it? Because that's obviously what's going to come next as you try and understand what this means to you, you know. Like, because clearly you. And this is almost why I started with your Instagram post, because I think this is what I kind of recognized in the language that you used, you know, like that there was this deeper meaning to this whole thing that you were still really trying to get your head around, you know, like you were still trying to understand.
Yeah.
Like, which is, yeah, I mean, what, 10 years to get there, your whole career that you geared towards getting there, the friendships, like the, I guess, do you feel, I mean, ultimately you've achieved a life's ambition there, right? Like, you have done that. Like, that's, and there's not many people that get to say that, really. You know, you've actually accomplished something that you've worked. It's a very significant thing. That's all I need to say on that. So, like, yeah. Are you able to recognize it in those terms yet? Like, as in, like, the full stop at the end of that particular sentence, if you like.
Definitely. I think that it's also made me understand that when you have energy for something in life, or motivation or desire for something, it's because that's maybe the right time for you to do it. And, you know, without obviously stressing it, but like, and then once you achieve that, the next chapter comes, and that chapter is potentially a little bit more complicated and harder, or, you know, requires more endurance or perseverance, or, you know, and then you achieve that one, and then there's the next one. And I definitely feel like this has been kind of the boss in the computer game.
Well, you just
analogy.
You just described it as well. You used such a fascinating phrase. You said motherly punishment, I think you said.
Yeah. God.
But that's like a real, again, like you it takes me back to the kind of the sagas though, and the myths, you know, like, because what those old tales have, like, they personify nature, don't they? You know, they give nature characteristics.
Sure.
They show nature that respect on that level of a living relationship, you know, which is obviously equally what's kind of going on here for you.
Yeah, I felt that it sounds as crazy as it probably, or it's as crazy as it is to say as it sounds, but I literally felt that deeply. You know, I felt like the first time I saw this wave, all the waves that I see and surf in the Baltic, I feel that there's an energy, a very unique energy to each one, to each place. And the first time I saw this wave, I knew straight away that this is like a very monumental place. And, you know, it will be in my life as a surfer, and my journey as a surfer, but also as my career as a surfer. It's going to be a monumental part. And yeah, I feel like it's a huge honor to be able to have had this path in life.
Yeah, man, for dude. Sure. Well, I'm very grateful for you talking to me about it. So honestly, dude, it's much appreciated. And look at that. Look at that beautiful backdrop. You got the golden hour coming in. Look at that. Amazing. So how long are you there for? Are you there for a while?
I kind of have a trip where I just have no deadline from March till June. Like, I mean, that you'll get tired of it after a while, because it's just so many. It's there's a lot of down days, but it's also such a joy to be able to be out looking for waves in this environment. It's crazy. And, you know, places also where weather just forces you to do stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you're forced to stay inside, or you're forced not to, and you can't have access to so many places. So it's just such an adventure. Staying in this zone, which is, I guess, a 1200 kilometer coastline for the next 3 months, and or until I feel like it's time to leave.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, dude.
So there you go. That was me and Freddie, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what a smart man, what a really interesting take. And I just love that, how these themes that have kind of woven through his career all culminated in this experience. And I also love the fact that he obviously understands it's had this deep meaning to him. He still doesn't really know what the outcome that's going to be. And that's what he's going to be exploring. So yeah, thanks, Freddie. Follow him on Instagram, Freddie Meadows. There's loads of old school print media stuff about this. Surfline did one of their comedy, you know, chin strokey pieces that they do, like they used to do for Magic Seaweed as well, which always make me laugh, the tone of those things. Sorry, everyone. And yeah, make sure you follow Freddie and keep up with his adventures, the saga of the Swedish surfer indeed. So housekeeping corner. And it's been fairly eventful few weeks since I put out my last episode. I've been to France, which was nice. I did an amazing open thread with Sally McGee and Tom Bing of Yonder Surf, which was really interesting, and which I think people really enjoyed. I was a guest, as I mentioned earlier, on Dan Burgess's excellent Spaceship Earth podcast, on which we talked a lot about a lot of the preoccupations and themes that have been making their way into Looking Sideways over the last year as I've been working on the announcement. So I'm really grateful to Dan, because I've been interviewed a lot over the years now. I've probably been on about 10 other podcasts. That's definitely the one I enjoyed the most. That's no slight on any of the other people who've had me on their podcast, because a lot of those are close friends of mine. But Dan really had obviously done his research. He's obviously really thought deeply about what I do. And he had a really interesting line of question. And to be honest, more to the point, he just really got what I'm trying to do with this. And that's just really nice. You know, I got my mate Lauren McCallum took the piss out of me, because I said at the end of that episode, well, I really felt seen then. I make no apologies for using that language. I am in therapy, and I do appreciate the importance of being seen. And I definitely felt that, courtesy of Dan. So thank you, Dan. He's doing great work. The Spaceship Earth, I posted it in 10 things. I've also posted a link to it in one of the things I've just started doing, actually, which is I'm going to be doing a load of video diaries about the announcement, and I'm going to be just basically doing a load of bonus content about the announcement. So if you're a paid subscriber, you would have already received this the other day, the first video diary and bonus podcast, in which I sort of talked about the progress of the announcement. I talked about what's been going on with it, why it's taken so long, what the themes are, how I've gone about it. I'm also going to be publishing all the interviews that I've conducted for the announcement, which I think is about 15, as bonus content, which will all be behind the paywall. And obviously the announcement itself, the series, will be free, but I'll be posting a lot of extra stuff. So I just want to say a big shout to the paid subscriber massive, actually, because I've talked about this before, but I did it a year ago, and I did wonder how many people would just cancel after a year. And quite a few people did, obviously, but most people didn't. And even more incredibly, most people keep subscribing. So I've decided to do all this as a bit of a thank you for that. So, so there you go. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy it. And another thing I've been doing to try and say thanks to everyone for the support is HKC Discount Club. So that's actually, it's actually taken fucking ages to set. I was like, yeah, fuck, I'm going to do a load of bonus stuff for a load of discount codes for all the brands that I work with and that I like. And fuck me, that was a mission, because obviously when you when you try and say to a brand like, hey, do you want to do a discount code? And they're like, yeah, that sounds great. But then it turns out you got to spend weeks chasing them. So big up to DB Goodrays and Finisterre for doing it really quickly. Vivo were also first out the blocks, and Albion have just done it as well. So if you go to my Substack or my www.wearelookingsideways.com websites, you'll see new tabs which are called HKC Discount Club. And if you click on that, you're going to see all the details of the offers. I've actually just had an email today from Stance, who have agreed to give me a 15% discount code. And The Wave are giving me a discount code, meaning you will save money if you want to go to The Wave. So, you know, The Wave and Stance aren't live yet because I've not got around to it. But basically, it's going to be The Wave, Stance, Albion, Finisterre, Vivo, Goodrays, DB Journey. I'm also speaking to Yeti. I'm also speaking to Liquid Death, although they've gone a bit off the boil, if you'll pardon the pun. And I'm also working on Patagonia and Arc'teryx, but those two are a bit trickier, as you might imagine. But there's deals to be had, so have a look. And, that'll be, if people do want to order and save money, that will obviously be great. So yeah, all right, that's it for today. I am waffling, and it's Monday night, and I've got a double day hangover, so I'm going to go for now. So thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next time. Nice one.